This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boynodiris, Sandy Kearney, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 90, Educate Gaming.
Welcome to our podcast, Games at Work. We are back. I haven't been here for a while, so I'm excited to be here, everybody. Looking forward to today's topic discussions. It's Sandy. How are you, Michael and Phaedra?
Doing well, Sandy. Welcome back. A long, brutal summer of work, right?
And yes.
I just flew in last night and my arms are tired. Phaedra, over to you. How are you doing?
All is well. I can't believe it's already August. How did that happen?
Yeah, I know, isn't it?
Summer go. Do you remember the days when we were kids and summers used to be relaxed and chilled?
And long.
And long, I know.
Now they're like, oh, it's a couple of minutes.
And the play, we don't get to play as much in summer as we used to. What's up with that?
I know.
There's a couple of things that really struck me this week, which I wanted to share on the show. One is an article by Fast Code Design that talked about business lessons that we could draw from, let's say, interesting organizations. So it was really talking about organizations that have managed to really create resilient cultures, right? Ones that not only recruit incredibly effectively, but are also have that level of retention and stickiness to maximize profitability. And of course, the focus for this particular article was on drug cartels. You know, you expect Google or something like this, but no, they were talking about the drug cartels fast outpacing just about any other corporate business entity there is with regards to how well they manage to do this. So I'm going to share the link.
Well, Phaedra, it's funny. It's drug cartels because, you know, we've been talking for some time about how a lot of the freemium or paymium games, right, are really like the crack model, right? So drug cartels are a perfect analogy here.
No, it's true. It's true. I mean, the article goes on to talk about things like Insignia and Credos and their ability to be agile and improv with the changing of the market. I mean, so there's a lot of interesting lessons to be learned there.
Very cool.
So this is always that, you know, legitimate business model that's utilized by everyone.
Right.
So it's not limited to the non-legitimate business, but it's a good business model. So
exactly. That's the point of the article. Like, here's what we can learn in the realm of business from drug cartels. The other thing I wanted to point out, which seems to have been getting a lot of buzz the past couple of weeks, at least within my circles, has been on gamified ideation. And it's basically this premise of, how do you encourage people to share ideas? It starts off with sharing of ideas within an organization. But I think there's a tremendous opportunity to really leverage gamification, not just to get people to share, but also to vet, to prioritize, to staff, and to fund, like carry it throughout the entire life cycle of ideation. So there's been a lot of interesting discussions happening with a wide variety of different groups who've really been trying to hone in on this and flesh it out and really get some great pilots going. Have you guys seen any really good examples of this?
Well, I spent all last week in Austin gamifying new designs for a product that we're working on, and we used kind of all the classic gamification ideation sessions, right? And at the end of the week, as we tweeted out on our gamesatwork.biz Twitter account, we won. My team won out of, I think there were 30 different major projects at the session, all trying to gamify new designs and identify things that could be delivered very quickly with high value for the customer. You know, it was really cool to use gamifying, not only defining the personas that you're looking at, the problems that they were having with either their business space or whatever, the potential stories that would address their problems, storyboarding, et cetera, but all kind of playing time boxed, you know, 2 hour types of brainstorming games, a lot from a book that we reviewed on the show, I want to say a year and a half ago, called Game Storming. A lot of those same types of techniques were used in that ideation gamification. And by the way, I know that our good buddy Michael Martin also joined the show.
Yeah, I'm here too, and hopefully you can hear me.
We can.
We can.
Awesome. Well,
good. Everybody's here.
I know. And I was hoping, Michael, you were going to say that because James Macanufo has been on the show here with us before. And we've talked about Dave Gray as well, who's a friend of Phaedra and myself. So how cool is it that you're using those techniques to win the day?
We win. We win. And the really cool thing is the team that won received a game called Wild Ducks. It's a card game invented by a game an IBM designer out of Atlanta who came up with the idea during one of his World of Warcraft guild breakfasts. We're going to have him on the show in the next couple of weeks. So really exciting. We're actually going to try to get a game together and play it a little bit beforehand, before the show, so that we can talk about it in more detail.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and Sean's going to be a fun talk.
So you posted something, Michael, that sounded really interesting. The ambush at Sheridan Springs and Dungeons and Dragons. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I figured, you know, as we talk about games and gaming and everything else, right? One of the games that really got me started in the whole creative aspect of understanding games and kind of became the foundation for why I like MMOs and large expansive worlds and environments for exploration and quests and stuff was the game Dungeons and Dragons, which was originally invented by Gary Gygax. And I hope I didn't butcher his name, but I believe I said it correctly. I had always wondered why that business had gone through some very dramatic changes over the years. And I saw this article come through on Dig for me this week. It really explains the game that was played by the board of directors to oust him from his own company. but the interesting part really was kind of the history of how they built the company, what were some of the founding ideas behind it, what were the desires of, you know, what were the problem they were trying to solve in playing this game. You know, it was fun, it was exploration, all the things that, gosh, we've been talking about for years around exploration and questing and building things and the different types of players, but also just the business aspect of it, you know, given the topic of the podcast of playing games for work, I thought it would be interesting to at least have an article that we could reference on games that were played to a business. But Michael, I saw, I know you guys probably haven't had a chance to read this article, but I saw that you were playing some games this week at work yourself.
I always do. One of the games was
not political games.
I'm trying to remember which one in particular. You know, I did have the opportunity to visit with our team members in Bratislava, so I did play the driving game, and I was really pleased to use Waze. We've talked about that a lot of times to actually help the people that I was planning to see know when I was going to arrive. So I don't know if you've done the share my drive, you know, angle before, but that was kind of well received. And it was a neat thing because it's a 2 hour drive from Budapest to Bratislava. What were you thinking about in particular?
Just some of the brainstorming, and to reference back to Phaedra's comment, some of the brainstorming that you were doing with the various teams around social business and things of that nature.
Yeah. You know, we were doing some things also. It's very similar out of the game storming book too, where we would time box ourselves. We would throw some ideas out, which again, the classic rules of brainstorming games are every idea is valid. You can't block. It's very much like improv comedy when you think about it that way, right? It's yes and. It's not no. So it's like, Michael, why are you wearing a lawnmower on your head?
Yeah. Well, I am wearing a lawnmower on my head, and I've got a crew cut. Or I guess it would be a buzz cut, right?
So it was a lot of fun to be able to do that, and it's great fun to be able to do this kind of brainstorming across oceans and across the room, and to do a little bit of that at the same time. And ideation really is a way of bringing that to the fore. And Phaedra, you were just talking about this. You know, my sense is that ideation works best when you've got a significant diversity in your game playing population. So I'm wondering about the games that you were thinking about there, if they have a way to either amplify or really bring into focus a diversity of the people who are playing in order to spark new ideas that would come out.
I'm glad you brought that up because at least with the conversations I've had, they really wanted to open up some of these brainstorming sessions with the general public. But what I found is what they were originally trying was really basically posting a topic and saying, okay, everybody, go and brainstorm. And my thought is it lends us back to our friend Dan Baden at the CDC. You know, his team went and kicked off the zombie apocalypse campaign, which has been one of their most successful campaigns to teach and relay the impact of disaster preparedness. Since then, they've created characters and story to relay, you know, what are the best practices for hepatitis or to
Ebola.
Disease game. We could look at if they just did a logistics game on how that might or might not spread, you know, then you could find the critical points, right?
Hey, did I get any of you guys hooked on the game Plague Incorporated?
Yeah, no. I've played it, and my son has played it too. So
I actually was on the plane last night and decided to fire it back up again because it was one of the few games that I could play without a network connection, because everybody likes to put you on the network now and find out geolocation data about you while you're gaming. and I had forgotten how much fun it was to kill everybody.
Destroy, Michael. That's what we use in our world.
That's right.
13-year-olds, you don't kill in games anymore. You destroy because digitally they can be recreated. This is teaching a new generation about the effects of gaming.
Oh, excellent. When I think of, you know, kill everybody, I thought that was more permanent. Destroy sounds like you just completely wipe them off the face of the earth. It's not a permanency, but a total desolation.
Yeah. Well, this is trying to connect them up with the world, real world and the digital world and keep it connected.
So you guys would love this game, right? I mean, the premise of this game is instead of playing, you know, as the humans defending against, this evil virus or plague or whatever, you play as the plague.
Yes.
And your objective is to
kill everyone.
Wipe the planet of all of the people.
And matter of fact, what they did recently is they came out with an add-on, which I haven't bought yet, but probably, you know, if it I'm test playing it right now, called the Simian Flu. Aligned to Planet of the Apes.
Hmm.
So, I mean, it is awesome. I mean,
what's interesting to me about the discussions, and they kind of all come back to one point today, is this whole new operations model that's surfacing from gaming. So tying in like to the article, Michael, that you sent about Dungeons and Dragons, you know, when they originally started their game, it was one kind of a game, and then it became a role-playing game. And interestingly enough, if you think about it, role-playing is used in business all the time, especially in operations where you're learning about the various activities and whatever kind of business you're in. So I think it'll be funny to see when gaming becomes ordinary and sort of less compartmentalized in all these organizations, how they use those operational transitions to make things work too. And by the while, you've got the business problems going on where, you know, the takeovers and the things like they talk about in the Dungeons and Dragons world.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, one of the things that I found fascinating, I was actually talking to one of the product managers in IBM's Watson space, and they were looking at, you know, wouldn't it be cool if we could do some games around this? And I'm like, oh yeah, come listen to the podcast. We'll give you some ideas.
Novel concept. But I've been thinking about it a lot, even from an operations perspective, because here in higher education, they're still not really receptive to talking about serious games as an academic endeavor. And I keep thinking, you know, wouldn't it be good to have students be able to, quote, play the advising game, where they, you know, can self-organize more often and, you know, more capably, especially the adult learners. This could be an andragogy thing where adult learners could play the advising game, and then maybe they come up with an answer, you know, figure it all out and can come back and have a better idea versus, you know, the step-by-step linear processes of old trying to be forced into the andragogy game.
Hey, so it'd be interesting, Sandy, if you could kind of explain the advising game. It'd be kind of neat, and Michael and I can kind of rip it to shreds, because that's what we do in brainstorming, right? No.
So here's an example of thinking of it differently, and I know you guys know me well enough to know that I came in from, you know, somewhere else, and I don't think the way they do here and or anywhere else. And so I started to be very innovative with the programs that we have. And I said, you know, rather than looking at these just on a text sheet that shows, you know, this core and this linear process, why don't I make a periodic table of this? And so it really was an interesting view then when I looked at it as a periodic table of courses and then said, okay, how might a student organize themselves and then organize with each other? Because again, in higher ed right now, one of the challenges we have, especially in adult learning, is projections. You can't really determine and tell, because people don't want to register weeks in advance. You know, they want to do this stuff just in time, just like we all do. And so how is it I can sort of establish this? So if we play the advising game and they all go out and play the advising game, then I could actually look and say, okay, in that class, which is this grouping on the periodic table, 8 people want to be there at this time. That's the class I want to run. And instead of them, you know, it's a bit fun at the same time. And, you know, they can, again, set out their projections and look for the goal to achieve the win at the end, which is completing the program. And I just thought, you know, maybe we could have them play the advising game when they first come in, lay it all out and have enough people do it. If you play together, then you've now given a good projection and organized it. Well, then you just have to make the adjustments.
Well, it's interesting. As one of the brainstorming exercises that we did in a meeting this week, you know, we were brainstorming various steps or aspects into a larger solution. And each person got a bunch of votes, one on technical feasibility and one on the impact, right? And you were supposed to independently vote on whether something was technically feasible or had big slash independently had big impact, right? And it's amazing how hard it is for people to do that independently in their own mind, right? Mm-hmm. So you had X number of votes, and what you found was people would start clustering. So if you really felt strongly that this would have a big impact, suddenly you would start voting that it's technically feasible too.
Right.
Or if you saw that here's a bunch of things that are really technically feasible, people would start hovering towards, well, those must have good impact. And you can't do that. So how do you train people to really segment their mind between two different axes when you're kind of doing one of these voting exercises?
And not be influenced by others, right?
Not because be influenced really by others or themselves. How are you not influenced by yourself when you say, man, this is really important. Yeah, it might be kind of hard, but I think it's technically feasible. So I'm going to start adding more votes to that.
Right. Well, it is similar in nature. And I mean, when you think about it, because the variables can be immense when you bring in someone who's got X number of college credits and, you know, certain level of achievements, but everyone that comes in the door is different. So you've got to try to figure out what all the overlapping points are. And I'm certain there's probably some computer program out there that does all this. It's very expensive. And my thought was it'd be cheaper just to write a game, you know, and have them all play it every semester instead of me having you sit in front of me and I try to, you know, weave through this one thread. Then I'm just going to ask all my students to play the advising game each semester and you know, they might figure out, you know, this topics class is actually the one we all want to take. So they pick it and that's the one we run versus me picking a class and saying that's the way it has to be. I don't know. I just thought it would be fun too. So they might be more motivated to do it, but making it serious enough that in higher education it's welcome is one of those business challenges like you run into, as we talked about in the articles today.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And you get the value out of it because the students are saying what's valuable to them. So that's you're actually meeting the needs, so right?
Yeah. Instead of it being me having to, you know, pull it out of you, you're going to push your information to me and you're going to do it in a way that you enjoy and feel is value add too, without all the high pressure, you know, kind of structure, you know, putting you in the bucket, whether you want to be there or not, just because you have to do A or B. Right. So it's, I don't know.
So you hit on two topics in your remarks that kind of reflected on my experience too, and or at least I was reflecting. And one of them was when I did my MBA program at Thunderbird, we did a series of games, you know, operations research, decision making sort of games where you had to actually play out. One of them was you were the CEO of a company that manufactured refrigerators, and you could establish plans.
Were they connected? Were they connected fridges?
No. They wouldn't tell you when you ran out of milk and they didn't tweet. Yeah, you know, 1992, right? So a little while ago.
They did have ice makers in them though, Michael.
Okay, they did. And you had to pick, you know, where in the world you were manufacturing them. You had to know about shipping costs. You had to know about raw materials. And you had to know where your markets were and how you were investing in your marketing and your manufacturing and your distribution networks so that you could then win as a team against the other teams in the class. And that would run every class would be essentially like another year. So you had to do your planning with your team in advance and then execute your actions, and then the game would then say, okay, now here's what's happened, or you know, we had a spike in Freon, you know, and the prices have just gone through the roof, and this is what now you have to figure out what's the impact on you. So it was pretty clever.
Did they actually play the game year over year, where the inputs to each year was the outputs of the previous year? So it's a constant improvement game.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's awesome.
See, I mean,
it was an accelerated timeline.
Yeah, I thought we could make this game and call it Educate, and we'll use like Innovate, right? We'll use the 8 in the middle there for the infinity circle of learning, because you can just play the game over and over again. And you think about it, it would become a really good career tool for people to decide. It would become you could just do a lot of things with it, and I just think it would not be cost prohibitive to build that and let students play it, as you know, instead of making them take a survey or all the other things that we try to do to figure it all out, and you know, get the end results much quicker in a much less painful way and make it some fun.
Very cool.
And crowdsourcing it as well, right? So you're actually getting, you know, like people of like mind with like interests. Here's what's worthwhile, right?
Right. So we need to get some volunteers, some universities and some volunteers to go out and let's make this game Educate. And it'll be an career advising game that students can play on their own and or with others. And because that's another piece of this, right? So especially with adult learning, the model's a cohort, you're all together as a group. But that doesn't work when someone's requirements are different. And then you have, you know, just the today one-to-one. You know, and there's thousands of those and they're trying to conduct those. But at some point, you have to do a one to many relationship in order to conduct a course. So if you want to have synchronous human interaction, of course, we can take that offline and have a whole big discussion on asynchronous education and learning. That's not what this is. This is more about this human network of intellectual exchange, too. So anyway, that was my thought as I read through the articles today and the discussions that we had, that, you know, my next big thing is going to be to see how we can get an Educate game built that universities can use and, you know, solve these problems by letting the students solve them playing a game.
That's really cool.
I love it. I love it. And I know we're nearly out of time, so I will leave this as a teaser for the next one. You started talking a little bit about nonlinear processing. And I've started tweeting about this a little bit too. So I think there's a very interesting way of saying, how can you string together in a nonlinear way common processes to achieve a desired outcome? but it is customized, mass customized, individualized to the person who's executing the process. And I'd love, would love, Sandy, to talk more about that with you.
Okay, we can, and we'll add in some concepts around like murmuration too, right? So it's a really cool biomimicry concept, and we can talk about that and how one might play in that space on the next podcast potentially.
That's absolutely. That sounds very cool. And Michael, I know you you are looking for, you mentioned the on the last show, you're going to be doing a couple of interviews over the next week or so.
Well, it won't be a couple. It'll be one.
Okay, an interview with multiple people?
It's an interview with multiple people. It's the founders of a company called GraviTalent. They're a startup here in Budapest, Hungary. And I'm looking very much forward to having that discussion with them. Although my good microphone, unfortunately, is already packed up and is starting its sea shipment journey back to North Carolina. So we're going to have to make do with this this snowflake, or maybe I have to go buy another one. I don't know.
Does that mean you'll see it soon?
Yeah, kind of.
Oh, painful joke. So in another fast-paced, extremely quick show this week. Just in closing, what games are you guys playing lately?
Can I be embarrassed?
Yes.
You know, there was a statement made, I think it was by Jane or someone that says, you know, if a game has reached mass populations, you know, you just have to play it just to get an exposure to it and understand.
Are
it
you
a
little playing
bit.
The Kim Kardashian game?
Yes, but I haven't signed on with Facebook. So, but yes, I thought I have to experience what all the buzz is about for myself. And yes, I'm playing the Kardashian.
So can I pick on that for a second? Only because. Yeah. I think it was a year or two ago, the guys over at Weekly Geekly, now Media Pulp UK, talked about, and I can't remember the name of the actor. I think it was Warwick. He played the main guy in Willow.
Mm-hmm.
Basically the exact same game 2 years ago.
Well, this game is a reskin, right?
No, but the skin is different. The developers are different, et cetera. But it was basically you're an actor trying to make it, trying to go up from, you know, Z list to A list. And what are the things you have to do?
Wow, that's pretty amazing. So let's talk about the games I've been playing, which are the classics. The remake of Monopoly Empire, the board version, having nothing to do with digital or electronic. But I got to tell you, it's been very fun and it's very different, very modern. And my littlest one knows nothing about real Monopoly. So this has been fun.
Cool.
And then the second one is your classic game called Spoons. And we have played a lot of that this summer. And so it just goes back to cool. The fact that you bring the fun to the table, whatever game you're playing, whether it's electronic or otherwise. But we've had a bit of a hiatus from electronics this summer and have leveraged that time to go back to good old-fashioned board games.
Excellent. And right now I'm playing a little of Clash of Clans, which is another one that's hit way too much mass appeal. And it's very similar to all the rest of the build your space games, except that people come in and keep destroying your stuff.
And that game is so heavily advertised on so many channels. It's like, you must play this game. You must play this game. You must play this. So is it a you must play this game?
Yes and no. I turn off all notifications.
Is it which game is this, Michael, that you're turning off?
I turn off all the notifications in Clash of Clans.
Oh. Yeah, we had that in our house for a while. There were lots and lots of issues with users and age and
they want you to purchase stuff, which I refuse to do.
Yeah, so we're back to Minecraft for that sort of goofy experience.
Well, great. I'm so excited to have a full contingent of co-hosts on the show today, even though our co-host Phaedra had to drop about midway through, and we're all excited that we're going to be in the same time zone soon. We want
to
hear
we'll
your.
We'll have to have a welcome back show, Michael Martin. In the meantime, you guys have a very good weekend.
You too, and everybody out there listening to the show, drop us your comments, your feedback, your ideas, your questions, your desires, your problems, whatever, and we'll talk about it on our next show at gamesatwork.biz.
See ya.
You've been listening to gamesatwork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network. And would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.